Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe, and everything.
Hello, it's us again. We're back. And I'm going to go straight in with the card that I picked today because it's so very, very, very pertinent. So I'm asking the Goddess Oracle with words written by Amy Sofia Marashinsky, illustrated by Hrana Janto. And I got the card Sheila Nagig. So Sheila Nagig, for those of you who don't know, is she's an ancient Irish goddess. She's the hag in many ways, but she is perhaps more known as that figure crouched above many a church door and indeed hidden in the roofs of various churches, who squats on the ground, clearly old and haggy, holding her vulva open with her two hands, with saggy old pendulous breasts and, you know, the kind of bony rack of her, what are those things
ribs.
Called?
Ribs!
Yes. Well, I'm glad I was able to contribute something to the conversation.
Thanks! And she is, within the context of this deck, she is all about opening. Which just struck me as like, oh, the world is opening.
Yes.
We're allowed out. Yes. We can meet a whole other person outside.
Well, we're assuming this because this is a pre-record. I just want to say that just in case the whole, everything goes
to shit.
Yes. And we are actually recording this a week or so beforehand and we are actually doing it on Zoom, but we are looking forward to being able to be outside.
Oh my God, so looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in theory, by the time you're hearing this, we're... Yes. We're allowed out.
And it's lovely it's not a young woman opening. It's lovely. It really is beautiful that it's the hag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the vulva.
Implicit in the hag in this particular instance is woman of knowledge and power.
Yes.
The hag is not just an old ugly biddy.
Yeah.
She is that crone, that woman who is wise because of her experience. Yes. And because she is now deeply connected to the cycle of life, death, life, and in its death aspect is that completely ruthless wisdom.
Yes.
That comes from, I don't give a fuck, you can't scare me.
Yes.
Because I have, in terms of the length of my life, so little left to lose.
Yes.
And she is, on the one hand, terrifying, and on the other hand, she is the one that we desperately need, and we need to open to her and allow her to open in our culture.
Yes.
Because she has so much wisdom.
And this is why we do love the national treasures like Maggie Smith and Judi Dench, because they do express that in their parts. I mean, Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey, acerbic, and quite often got to the point, and in the end, totally kind as well. And Judi Dench saying, basically, if you can't tell people to fuck off, what's the point? And she is magnificent. And this comes back again. It's so helpful for me because I have this fundamental knowing that I don't think that Botox facelifts are a good idea because it keeps us young and sexualized.
Yeah.
And if you're still sexualized, if you're still looking for this approval, or, you know, you have to find me attractive, how can you hold your strength?
Well, you can't. Absolutely. No. They're completely mutually exclusive.
Yes.
If you're looking to be approved of, you'll never find your strength because you're looking to be approved of, and that is shifting sand.
Yeah. And there's this fine line, isn't there, between you, people who have their nails done because it makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's great. Whatever you do that makes you feel good is terrific. But it's only still going to be a feeling. It's still going to be the fleeting thing, isn't it?
And yet, the feeling, to me, beauty, I know this is such a trite thing to say, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. Beauty is a thing that radiates from within us.
Yes.
And when we feel beautiful, so if that, you know, if it's doing your nails or, you know, as I said a few weeks ago, for me, it's the knowing that were I to die, I could be just, you know, nudged under a pile of leaves and no one would notice me because I wear the colours of nature because, you know, that's the divine to me. That's my true love. But that when we feel beautiful, you know, part of what makes me feel beautiful is the knowing that because I don't buy new things, hardly ever, what I wear hasn't contributed to pollution, not anywhere, or suffering, or child labour, or air miles, or any of those things. And that makes me feel beautiful. And my, if nothing else, my contentment with that will radiate out.
Yes.
And that is a lovely thing to see in another person.
Yes. Oh, thank you. We've been talking off and on for all year about how it's important to say things because sometimes you don't even know what you think until you've said it. And then you go, hang on, that doesn't feel right. Or that is. So you've actually clarified for me everything that I was thinking about that. Yes, if when you feel, you radiate.
Yeah.
I once saw, I think it was in the Cotswolds somewhere, a churchyard I was walking around, and it had the name of it was just a cremation plaque, but it had the name of the woman, and underneath it just wrote radiant.
Aww.
And that's the most, that's one of those pivotal moments that you remember for the rest of your life because it just strikes you.
Mm.
And I just thought that is the most perfect epitaph.
Yeah, very touching.
Yeah, but that's what you're talking about, radiance.
Yeah. And to me, Sheila Nagig is one of those images that is, to me, is radiant. I mean, she's, you know, in terms of the culture of we must look young and sexualized forever, she is profoundly offensive and in total and utter opposition to that. She's old, she's skinny, she's naked, she's a female with saggy breasts, no pointy bra thing, and she's holding open her vulva. Yes. The place that, you know, life emerges from, the place in which life is implanted, etc., etc., etc. And, you know, our culture looks at her and goes, ew. But to me, she's, you know, she's all the fierce beauty of the truth of life. And that invitation to open to that fierce beauty of the truth of life, which you can't really, really live unless you're completely willing to acknowledge and face the fact that you and everything you have ever loved will die.
Yes.
And that only in the acknowledgement of that truth do we have the kind of bare face, bare ass bravado to truly live. Because if we can't face that, then we're living in fear, and fear will curtail everything.
Yes.
So, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that the elders amongst us should get out there naked and reveal our yonis to the world. But, you know, hell, in some ways, why the hell not? They do that in lots of cultures. And, you know, the apotropaic kind of, I didn't say that right, but I hope you know what I mean, the protective nature of the yoni, the vulva, is a thing that's acknowledged by many, many, many peoples around the world. And the lifting of skirts and the showing of female parts is a tremendous warding off of evil in lots of cultures.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know more?
Not really. No,
no. But that's
I do know, just hilariously, what's popping up image-wise in my head right now is that apparently when... what's Queenie's husband called?
Philip,
Prince Philip, went somewhere where presumably he was doing some sort of royal visit, so it must be somewhere that was once colonised by the Brits. The women there lifted their skirts to cover their faces and show their yonis as a mark of respect.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Isn't it fantastic? Oh, I've got to go away and find out more about that now.
I seem to remember something about that. Oh, yeah, I love it. That's amazing. And also, I just want to mark my own, not stupidity, but how one's cultural brain works. You named the hag, and because the name isn't familiar to me, I thought you were talking about a celebrity. So I said, who's so-and-so? And then I went, hang on, no, we're talking about this person. But my brain automatically went off into the field of celebrity rather than down into the inside, the truth of things.
Wow. Oh, God, wouldn't it be amazing if we had a celebrity who was the hag? I want to be on her Twitter feed or whatever it is you do when you think a celebrity is really cool. Which, yeah, I don't know why, but I'm afraid celebrity is really quite lost on me. I don't get it.
Well, that's another thing that astrology revealed for me. We have something called a north node and a south node, which is where we're meant to be heading.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked at my chart, I understood it that actually I was trying to head in the wrong direction, because as a child, I'd wanted to become well known for my mother's sake, because my father was quite famous.
Right.
And of course, that's not wanting anything for yourself.
No.
It's wanting it for somebody else who actually would have rejected it anyway because she'd have liked it herself. So, yes, I hear you. Celebrity is a terrible two-edged sword. And I was world famous in Peterborough once and I didn't like it.
Famous,
I was the breakfast presenter on the local radio station.
Oh, brilliant.
What, you had a 47% reach, which meant 47% of the people in the towns listened to that show.
Wow.
So if I went out into town and spoke, people knew who I was. And obviously they had pictures.
And why didn't you like it?
Because I couldn't be hidden. I couldn't. It was always, you're that girl off the radio. And then they'd have to tell you their opinions about everybody else on the radio. And you. And your choice of music, and you're that, and you don't have a life. One of the things that my bishop is passionate about, and he's such a lovely man. I mean, like all of us, we've all got our flaws, but he does a lot of work around the death of celebrities, because mm-hmm. energetically, when we grieve for a celebrity and don't want them to have died, the energy tug on their soul is enormous.
Wow.
Absolutely enormous. And he went to make quite sure that Captain Sir John Chaton Moore got through safely.
Wow. Blimey, I'm for me, the only celebrity that I can remember having any opinion about at all when they died is David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
And that if that got as far as me, then that got far.
Yeah. Well, think about the Princess of Wales's death.
Oh, wow, yeah.
How hard was it for her to move through?
Yeah.
Because actually you are involved in something like the Bardo for a few days after your death, where you have to sort of disconnect and move through.
Mm.
And if you've got hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people going, no, 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 it's got to create a force field. I'm sure you can get through.
Yeah.
But if you think about patterns and energies.
Wow, good for your bishop that he's out there protecting the unwary in that regard.
Bless his cotton socks. Yes. Oh, and I do want to say about last week.
Go on.
Did do the magic before I was ordained.
Louder.
Did do the magic before I was ordained. Many years before I was ordained. Haven't done any since. And I will also fess up that one of the reasons why I like the guy was I have Venus in Gemini, and when he pushed his sleeves up, I like forearms.
That's my second
sexual characteristic for me is our forearms and hands. If a man has ugly hands, I can't fancy him.
Wow, that's hilarious. I'm all agog now. I wonder what mine is. So if that's just rewinding a second, if that's a secondary sexual characteristic, what's a primary sexual characteristic? Is that like the main thing you fancy about someone?
Yeah. Yes.
And why wouldn't you go for the primary one rather than the secondary?
Well, you will go for the primary one, but the secondary one is something that says, I could perhaps sustain this. I would actually want to wake up with this person.
Okay. And what's your theory? You said before that you had a theory about it. What's the theory?
I just have a theory that where your Venus is placed in your pattern of creation will be one of the triggers of whether you find somebody sexually attractive.
Oh, okay. That's, or physically. To me, that makes just perfect sense, and I was assuming that was a thing rather than your theory.
Well, it probably is a thing. I don't.
Well, I mean, it might not be.
Probably should be. I don't know.
Someone's got to be there first to notice it and name it.
Yeah, singularly useless thing, really. Well, unless I wanted to be a magical practitioner, which I don't.
No, fair enough. Fair enough.
So we have our hag, which is ironic in a way because we're in spring, which is actually the time the hag leaves in the great cycles, isn't it?
Indeed, yes. Bridget takes over from the Kayach.
Mm.
On the other hand, as with everything, there's always and, isn't there? Mm. Because each is implicit in the other.
Yeah.
And so implicit in that transition, in a way, is the opening that is spring.
Yes.
So the upthrust of life and the new ways of being and all the seeds that we planted in the winter growing and da-da-da-da-da, both metaphorically and actually. And with all of those things that are Bridgety and springy and coming to life, then there is the kind of the turn back of the lemniscatic weaving of reality that then says, well, every time we have that, there's an opportunity for a new opening. And so to me, implicit in Bridget is the hag, the Kayach, the Shilin na Gig, and implicit in her is...
Well, it's the serpent and the tail, isn't it? It's the whole thing going round in its cycles. But tell me more about the ones in churches, because I've never spotted that.
Have you not?
No, I think it's amazing.
So there's one literally just down the road from you. I did just look it up before we spoke, but I thought it was in the church at South Taunton. But according to the internet, it's in the church house in South Taunton.
That's medieval.
There are, so the most common kind of story we have, as far as I'm aware, is that she is protective and that you more usually find her above the door.
Yes.
But in Exeter Cathedral, I think there are two, it's definitely one, and she there is absolutely hidden, barely discernible from the naked eye, right up, tucked away in some corner near a towery bit, you know, definitely not above the door.
So the masons knew she had to be there, but knew she had to be hidden.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. When do you know when Exeter Cathedral was made?
It's 11th, 12th century to start with. It started, but it was built over several centuries, I think.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah,
so that kind of negates the idea that she's...
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't, because it's this daftness of all the different aspects of Christianity, different aspects of Judaism, how we divide ourselves up. There may have been some aspects, like the Dominicans and the Franciscans, one of which approved of that being public and one of which didn't, and it depended who funded the cathedral. It would come down probably to finances. But I want to explore this idea. I love this idea of the vulva over the church door, because that, to me, says you are entering the Holy of Holies.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
You are coming into the ultimate safe space, the womb of the divine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, the story where she's only above doors is the story I want to be true.
Yes.
Because it then says absolutely that.
Well, the hidden one to me says you have to find it. Because that's what I always say to people when they go about, well, why isn't the Gospel of Mary Magdalene in the canon? Why aren't the Nag Hammadi? People were trying to hide them from us and all that kind of thing. And the simple answer to that is, if you haven't got something to look for, if it's all given to you on a plate, you don't want it.
Mm.
You have to want the sacred. You have to want it. Absolutely. You have to work for it.
Absolutely.
You have to have the discipline to apply for it, to wait for it. And I'm speaking as somebody who for many years had none of that.
Yeah, no, that's a thing that I say all the time to people who come to learn to journey, is that because we live in an, you know, indivisibly interwoven world full of spirit, containing spirit, contained of spirit, when you learn to journey, you have got to do it on purpose. You have to use your imagination as a tool in partnership with your will and with the spirits.
Yeah.
Because they've always been there, and if they were just going to hand it to you on a plate, you would have seen it by now.
Yeah, and 50-50, you always say,
50-50, it's got to be partnership.
Yeah, and I still think one of the defining quotations of the whole of last year for me came from Miss Susie Crawford, can't even say your name now, which was basically, we have to act as if we trusted spirit.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those wonderful little things that went and lodged and went, yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Because even if you get it wrong and you're catastrophically wrong, at least you'll say, I tried honestly.
Yes.
And openly, and I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, if my ego got in the way,
I'm really, really sorry.
I'm really, really sorry, and I will try to do better.
Yeah.
But at the time, that's what I thought was true.
Yeah.
Which is all any of us can ever
yes.
do.
Because we are not the ego. Even the ego can't see the whole planet. You can't see the whole wide picture.
I'm listening at the moment to a lovely book by Gabor Maté.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Brains there. Oh, well, mine. It's not what it used to be.
I'd like to point out to everybody but that I am in a room with a snoring beagle. It's not me. It's not Susie. You go on.
Can't remember what the book's called. It's about... ADHD.
Oh, yes.
And there's this really beautiful bit where he just expresses so heartfully how much he tried his best as a parent. He has ADD.
Yeah.
And so do two of his three children.
Yeah.
And he and one of his two brothers have it.
Wow.
And it's one of those things which is, there are genetic markers for it, mm-hmm. but it's also considered to be environmental. And he's saying it's only when particular environments meet particular genes that it will come out in a person. And the beauty of his expression of, I did what I could, was clear, just transmitted with so much love and so much understanding of that it wasn't perfect, but it was everything I could offer in the moment.
Yeah.
And clearly his compassion towards himself as well as his children, that he did his best. Mm. And I just thought, oh, that is so beautiful, because it's all any of us can ever do is our best in the moment.
Yeah, that's really healing for me. Thank you. Because many, many years ago, I made a conscious decision never to have children. It was a difficult decision to make at that time. Mm. But I knew I wasn't strong enough to be a good mother.
Mm.
I knew that I couldn't. There's a lovely line from an American series, God, the Devil and Bob, which is that Bob's father threw him a softer ball than his father threw to him. And I know my mother threw me a softer ball than her mother threw to her, and I did not believe I could throw a softer ball at that stage of my life. And I knew there was a lot of nasty stuff potentially around, and I just said, this stops here. It stops here. So, and I've often wondered, you know, did I do the right thing? Where's the karma in my actions and all that? But that was really, really helpful. It was the only thing I could do at the time.
Yeah. Fergus made the same choice.
Mm.
He didn't want to ever put another primate human being through what the men in his family line had put one another through down the generations.
Yeah.
And chose not to have children for that reason.
Yeah.
And has been the most extraordinarily wonderful parent to my sons. You know, he has three sons now.
Yes.
He is definitely their dad, their father, their parent. And he's a fucking sight better parent than I am. Because I'm you know, I adore my children, and so I'm a bit of a soft touch.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so fair. And in fact, you talking about that whole secondary
sexual
characteristics. Sexual characteristics. Maybe it's a weird one. Maybe I'm really off-piste here. But to me, the sexual characteristic that the thing that floats my boat more than any other characteristic is kindness.
Yes.
And I fancy kind people. Big time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a bit deeper than a secondary sexual. But yes, I know. Kind people, their hearts warm your hearts.
Yeah.
And also, it's very interesting, the definition of kindness. A couple of people sometimes tell me that I'm kind. And there's a slight difference in my psyche between being kind or doing what should be done.
Mm-hmm.
Or doing the right thing. And I don't actually think that doing the right thing is a kindness. I think it's something that needs to be done.
No, it's such a kindness.
Oh, interesting.
Oh my God, yeah.
Oh, thank you. That's interesting.
Oh, how dreadful to not do the right thing in the name of a faux kindness, which has no honouring at all of what's right and what needs to be done.
No, but if you do the right thing, of course you must always do the right thing. And usually at the time, right in front of you, the right thing is obvious. But I wouldn't have said that was kind. It would just be what you must do.
Oh, okay. I see where you're coming from. Yeah. I think we're splitting different hairs.
Yes, it's a language thing, I think. Yeah. It doesn't seem to me to be kind to do the right thing. It's the right thing. How could I not do it? I'm not trying to show off.
So there you are absolutely embodying the kind of the wisdom of Sheila Nagig, the Kaliach the Hag.
Huzzah!
Absolutely. Because her kindness is the kindness of the right thing, which can be potentially, apparently, cruel and ruthless. But it is a kindness because it is the right thing.
Yeah. Okay, she's the Dark Mother. Yes.
Yeah. And so perhaps that's one of the things that is the kind of, one of the shit things, in a way, about our society is that we tend to want to sugarcoat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we don't do the right thing, imagining that it would be a kindness, because we see ruthlessness as being somehow negative.
Yes.
And I'm not transmitting perhaps all that I mean by ruthlessness, but it's really authentic, good, clear, kind ruthlessness that says, you know, no, you may not do that.
Yes.
Have another sweetie, darling, because it's going to destroy your teeth, your skin, your figure, and potentially give you diabetes or whatever, you know, that.
And also it's good for you to learn discipline and restraint.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, okay. Yes, that makes perfect sense. But I just find it very odd when people, you're very kind. Huh? Because kind to me is when maybe I didn't have to do it.
Right.
Whereas if it's the right thing, I feel that I have to do it.
Yeah. Okay.
Not in a nasty way.
No. I understand. I'm sorry. I'm completely distracted by the fact that now I can hear your beagle.
That's That's Missy Moon, little Missy, snoring away on my meditation chair. There is a daily battle between beagles as to who gets my meditation chair.
Do you get to sit in it at all?
I do first thing when the beagles are out with Lion. I do my meditation while they're on their walk, while they graciously leave the house. Yes. Do my meditation.
They cape the chair for you.
Yes, and in fact, you are sitting in Missy's chair because I put another chair in here so that Sappho can have the meditation chair and Missy has the other chair.
Okay. Not that that's where the screen is.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good.
Not that I spoil them.
Not that you spoil them at all. No. Oh my goodness.
I am ridiculously kind to them when it's probably not the right thing.
Okay. More Sheila Nagig for you.
Yes, definitely. But I'm fascinating that they did get to put these over church doors. And were they often mistaken for devils?
I doubt it.
Good.
It's
because I'm just thinking about what the conservative church reaction would be to seeing one of these.
Well, there's a lot of disapproval. There's been a lot of defacing of them. There's been removal of some of them. Over the years.
I'm sure there would be. What a shame. But
massive shame. I mean, in a way, I've looked at quite a lot of images of her over the years, and it's always struck me that the one and only thing to me that you could ever mistake her for, bizarrely, and this might be just my weird seeing, is a frog. There's something quite frog-like
about her posture.
Yes,
I can see that in the picture you held up. Yes. Yeah.
And you know, the frog is another one of those symbols of the sacred feminine through antiquity. And that if she's a frog, in some ways, she still has, I mean, she's definitely not a frog, but were she to be a frog, she would still have no place on the front of a Christian church.
No.
Because that is speaking about the divine feminine in exactly the same way that it is if she's a woman.
It's fascinating because the Masons were given sacred knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have Masons now, but most of them don't have the sacred knowledge anymore. I'm very lucky I work with a couple who are studying Kabbalah with me because they want to make sure they have got the sacred knowledge. And that's brilliant.
Great.
In Washington, D.C., I'm quite a lovely man. But in the days of building Exeter Cathedral, Chartres Cathedral, they built sacred architecture. Mm. And I would love to know about the kind of things that were destroyed in the Reformation. We know that statues were taken down and stained windows, but what else?
Yeah.
And what did they depict?
Yeah.
Because people would go into a church and wander around it and ask questions and tell stories. And that's what it's all about. It's not about the written liturgy. You have to do it in this order and let's do it as fast as possible to get out of the church and have our cup of coffee and tell the parish council what we really think of them. You were meant to wander around and say, what is that about? What does that mean?
Well, and presumably there will have been a kind of commonly transmitted set of stories about the images that people knew. So
yes.
In the same way that, you know, people know the story depicted by the Stations of the Cross.
Yes.
How many are there? 12, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, even I know approximately what is depicted by the yes. Stations of the Cross. Actually, I bet I don't. I know it's Jesus' journey, but what else is it?
Well, it's actually climbing up the Kabbalistic tree of life, but don't tell anybody. But the bit about it is it's the stages of that we go through of despair, acceptance, asking for help, taking responsibility, and all the stages are about almost like our reactions, like Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's idea of denial, anger, depression.
Yeah, the stages
sort of thing.
Of grief.
My favourite one is the one where he meets his mother, because I always tell that story about, well, first Jesus picks up the cross, which is here's the problem. What can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And then he falls because actually it's too big.
Okay.
And somebody else helps him to pick it up. Somebody wipes his face. And then he has to tell his mother what's happened.
Like a good Jewish boy should.
Yes, and I always get a good laugh at that, because then Jesus meets his mother and you think, what's the relevance of that? You've got to tell your mother what you did.
Yeah.
You've got to tell your mother you're going to be crucified. And that, just that is a workshop.
Yeah.
So all this stuff, all this symbolism, and a lot of the Stations of the Cross were taken down in churches. I remember my mum being really cross that at her church the new vicar put up Stations of the Cross because that was too Catholic. No, it's not Catholic. It's more trying to get back to the story. What does that mean? There's Jesus meeting his mother. What does that mean to me?
Oh, oh dear. What's happening to your beagle?
Oh, she's her epiglossis went the wrong way, but she's got it back now.
Oh, jolly good.
Yes.
So,
lovely noise.
Yes, but I'm glad you told me there was a beagle sitting in the corner. I must say I would have been a little perturbed by that particular outburst. Gosh, that's put me off my stroke. I was about to ask you a question. So what's too Catholic about the Stations of the Cross? Is it that it's a decoration or that it features Mary or...?
No, I think it's just that it's not something that she'd had in the church before. I don't know.
Fair enough, yeah.
It is thought to be more high church that you would celebrate the Stations of the... go on the Stations of the Cross on Good Friday.
Okay. So what do you mean you would go on them?
You would consider them, you would contemplate them, you would discuss them.
Okay.
Well, actually, no, in Catholic churches now you wouldn't discuss them. That would have been the original idea.
So what happens after he meets his mother?
God, you know, I can't remember. I'd better go and do my research.
You'd better add, isn't Easter coming up?
I think
up?
He falls again.
Okay.
Can't remember. Nope, sorry.
The Vicar and the Witch, two old biddies who've clearly got a bit of a problem with their memories, rambling around some subjects that may be related to religion.
Well, we can come back to it for Easter, can't we?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Mothering Sunday, which is in the middle of Lent.
Isn't that...
We've just passed it, because we're doing a pre-record and I can't remember which day it comes out, I'm sorry, but it should be around now.
I think it's, we come out on a Friday and I'm pretty sure Mothering Sunday is going to be on Sunday.
Right, okay. Well, of course, in America that's Mother's Day and it's a different day. But in the Christian calendar, Mothering Sunday was the day you were allowed to go home if you were in service to see your mother and you were allowed to break your Lenten fast.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Give mother chocolates and share them.
Well, they probably didn't have chocolates back in those days.
No,
we were
no,
a surf
joking,
and all that. But yes, yeah. Yes. So,
That's hilarious. That's you. That's a beautifully kind of human thing. I thought you were about to tell the story where Mothering Sunday's got something to do with going to visit the mother church of your church or something.
Well, you could do that too.
But isn't that where it comes from? Or is that an urban myth?
Do you know, I've never even heard of that.
Really?
I'm really showing my bickering ignorance today, God.
Oh, okay.
I think that's lovely. Yes, go to your mother church. Yes, go to the cathedral.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was for, and that all the people from all the little churches went to the big church to join together.
Oh, well, that's lovely, because that's coming back to the divine feminine, the mother church, yeah. Isn't it? Yes.
Well, I mean, that absolutely could be urban myth. I mean, I've got no facts to base that in at all. I don't even know where I got that from.
Right. I'm writing it down. I better go and have a look. What else were we going to research, because we didn't? Oh, yes, Stations of the Cross.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So if we've had Mothering Sunday, Easter's beginning of April this year?
Yeah, I think it's about 12th, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And Easter, of course, is the great death and resurrection. The wonderful story of, if you agree to die to the problem, resurrection is a done deal.
I don't think we should get ahead of ourselves. I'm sure
we did it last year, but I'm sure
we did. We definitely did. Yes, you were on the did Christianity nick this from the pagans line of questioning?
Yes.
I remember it well.
Yes.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves, because I'm sure we can discuss at length Easter when we're nearer the time. And I must admit, I'm champing at the bit now, because
there will be cake.
By then, we are definitely allowed to be in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
And we can bubble, so.
You've already got a bubble.
I don't think you can,
and neither of us live alone. At the moment, we're not allowed to bubble.
No, I meant, but we could, when we're allowed to meet, I think we're still limited to the amount of people. Then we'll find out.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yes, nice weather.
There are a very limited amount of people that I would actually want to meet.
This is entirely true. I still remember last year when we were trying to do it outside and it started to rain. We had to go and sit in the garage. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. God.
Still, at least we can look back on 2020 with some humour.
Yes. Phew. And some relief that it's over.
And so is this podcast.
Oh, my goodness. They go by quickly, don't they? Weeks. I keep only arriving at the information that it's Friday when you tag me in a post. And here it is, it's Friday. And I'm like, oh my God, so it is. Yes. Yeah, when we get let out of lockdown, I'm going to have to rekindle my relationship with times, dates, days of the week, that stuff.
Yes. I had a lovely message from somebody yesterday saying, we've had to reschedule the wedding again. I'm the wedding vicar.
Nice.
How's the 22nd of August looking for you? And I went back and said, I'm sure it's free.
Oh.
And she came back and said, well, I just thought that everybody else might be rushing to rebook their weddings with you. And I said, this is true. Hopefully they will, but you are definitely in. 22nd of August is free.
Oh, lovely. I wish them happy.
Oh, they will be happy. They'll get the wedding they want, which is lovely.
Great.
I always do say, just in closing, whenever I do a wedding for somebody, and this is my part of my weirdness, I say, I wish you a long and happy marriage. I hope with all my heart that it will work forever. But if it doesn't, I want you to both come back to me and we will do you a divorce ceremony.
Mm.
Because when you've made a commitment, and you do make the commitment for life,
before your God, mean
it, before your God or before your registrar, whichever it is, as long as we both shall live, a ritual to release it's incredibly healing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And incredibly important.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. We'll see you next week. And, oh, maybe we'll be eating cake.
Woohoo!
Have some cake next time you listen. Then we can all eat cake together and celebrate. God bless. Take care and thank you.
Bye.